In today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, John and I are joined by David Lewis, the CEO and founder of Demand Gen. A fascinating conversation with him about everything in the sort of MarTech space. We talk about hamburgers.
We do.
Beer. We run the gauntlet in this episode.
It's an awesome episode.
It will also leave you hungry.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
A great show.
Heads in the Cloud with your host, David Portnowitz, Graham Potter, and John Roth.
Welcome to today's episode of Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz, and I'm joined by...
John Roth.
What a day it is.
It's an awesome day.
We're going to have David Lewis, who is the CEO and founder of Demand Gen, on the podcast today. I met David out at an event in Phoenix when I was out there at the B2B Marketing Exchange in February. Listen to David speak, and he is fantastic. And he hosts his own podcast, too, we'll bring up and ask him about it. And I can't wait to talk to him. He is, in the marketing world, one of the leaders, probably if not the best, at understanding how to find leads, how to nurture leads, how to understand leads.
How to score leads.
Yeah, I mean, well, everything. The whole process.
Exactly.
And he's written a book that is called Manufacturing Demand. And you can get it for free on his website, which is pretty cool. And you can buy a hard copy on Amazon. We'll have to see if we can get a couple of copies. What do you think?
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
We think we can work it out. I mean, you think so?
But no, I think this is an interesting topic. You know, we hear a lot from our partners and from in internally about how do we drive more leads? How do you get more in the funnel, at the top of the funnel? It's not easy. It's challenging, especially to try to understand who the right person is, what's their intent, you know, where are they going? What do they want? How do you get to them? It's a science, and it's not something that you can just guess at. You have to really put some thought, some process into it, and then test. You got to test. I mean, it's the only way to know. We'll get into all that with David today, and find a little bit about his company, what they do, and I'm excited to talk to him.
I am too.
What else is going on with you, John?
Life's pretty good, David. Life's pretty good.
Yeah. We got our road shows up and running.
I heard.
We have a couple of our out on the road. And
right now.
Yeah.
And
we've got lots of partners attending, and we'll be on the road for the next few weeks. I'll be up next week in New York, heading out to Indianapolis, Cleveland. I'll be out in California. So.
Wow. Is that all in 1 week?
It's brutal.
Is that in 1 week?
Got to log a lot of miles, John. It's 1 week, yeah.
Are you riding your bike or?
Yeah, I'm riding my bike. I'm taking a scooter, a bird.
Okay. Take a scooter, a bird. Planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm not going to be on the road trips.
You've been traveling a lot, though.
I have been traveling.
You were just in Orlando?
In Orlando at a trade show in Orlando. A couple of days over there with...
hanging out with our boy, Dana.
Dana. Yep.
We should get Dana on the podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
He'd be an interesting guy to talk to.
I think so. If we can,
our friend Dana Sell from the channel company.
He's a pretty busy guy, though. I think we can get him on here. Does he have a book?
I don't think so.
Does he like patty melts?
No, he loves beer.
He loves beer.
Big beer fan. We'll have a whole chat about craft beer.
Craft beer. Okay. Yeah.
Not your Budweiser.
So the craft beer thing. What's the deal with craft beers compared to regular beers?
It's the number of beers. It's the number of actual cans or bottles or units you sell. That's a craft brewery has actually a designation because they actually sell a certain amount. Like, you know,
if you sell one more than you're supposed to, you lose your designation of being a craft beer or brewery.
Yeah, Google this if you will. I think Sam Adams is still considered a craft brewery. I think they're considered the largest craft brewer in North America, but there's some threshold that you have to maintain underneath. It's like the amount of barrels you sell. I can't remember the exact designation, but it's like there's a certain amount. If you sell more than this, you can no longer be considered a craft brewery.
So Billy Bob down the road lives two houses down from me that brews it in his garage. He's considered a craft beer guy or just
a
bootlegger?
I think he's just...
Moonshiner.
He's just brewing. He's just a home...
He says it's beer. I'm not sure. It could be...
He's just a home brewer.
Home brewer.
Yeah.
Is there a designation for that?
Probably, yeah. So, I don't know. Less is taken forever. So.
All right, so here, this is from craftbeer.com. It says trying to define craft beer is a difficult task.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, but there are now over 6,000 craft brewers as of 2017.
I bet your Billy's not in there, though. My neighbor.
Does he brew his own beer?
Yeah.
The best craft beer in Sarasota by far is Calusa on Clark Road. They're fantastic.
Okay.
So good. The Calusa Focus, it's a nice IPA. It's New England. It's hazy. Whew.
Oh, here you go.
It's delicious.
Annual production of 6 million barrels or less.
Wow.
And I think Sam Adams is still considered a craft brewery.
Wow.
Or they were up until a few years ago. I don't know if that may have changed.
Well, I bet you know, we can ask all the questions of Dana. We'll just kind of quiz him. That'd be part of the fun of the show, just to ask some quizzical questions about craft beer, because he is...
I know he's a big fan of Trophy, which is a North Carolina beer. North Carolina craft brewery up in the Raleigh-Durham
area. Do you order that and ship it to your house? Can you buy it on, like, Amazon? You have to go to their website?
A lot of times you cannot get beer shipped across state lines. It depends on the state rules and things like that. Some beer you can, some breweries will. For example, Trophy, the one that Dana likes up in North Carolina, I think you can get that shipped. But some of them will, some of them won't.
Oh.
Anyways,
fascinating.
We've really digressed here.
We went from Dana to the craft beer stories.
Let's call David up. Let's get David on.
Come on, David. Let's go ring him up.
Ring, ring. John and I are now joined by David Lewis, who is the founder and CEO of Demand Gen International. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I just got back from a trade show in Austin, Texas, and it was one of those where you're supposed to get home at 10 o'clock at night and tuck yourself in, and that became 2 a.m. So I'm just lucky to be here.
Were you at a Serious Decisions Summit?
I was there, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I was supposed to be out there too. I just couldn't make it. We had a bunch going on here, and I know that we've actually got several of our folks on the road out in Houston and Dallas this week, and I know they got majorly delayed with the weather, so I'm assuming that's what happened to you as well.
It was weather on the way out and then in Dallas. So it was late flight out and then, pushing back the connection flights. But here I am, all safe and sound.
And you're in California, right?
I am. We're headquartered in San Ramon, which is in the East Bay, just outside of Silicon Valley.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Yeah. I'm actually headed out to San Jose next week. So I'll be out there meeting with a couple of our partners. So anyways, welcome to the podcast. David, you and I met briefly at a trade show earlier this year out in Phoenix, actually, and I got a chance to hear you speak and thought it'd be great to have you on our show to talk about a little bit about your business, what you guys do, and specifically about how you help partners and how, sort of how our partners can learn from you. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about Demand Gen and what you guys do and a little bit of history of the company?
Sure. Yeah. I have pretty much grown up in Silicon Valley. I started my career at Microsoft, and I was part of the U.S. sales and marketing team to introduce Windows and the first Windows products. So that's where technology started for me, and an opportunity presented itself in the Bay Area. So I moved up here and have been here ever since 1991. Ran marketing at a number of very successful tech companies. And then it was my company before this one, a company called Ellie Mae, where I ran marketing there, that I brought in marketing automation for the first time. This is circa 2003, and brought in CRM, Salesforce, at that time, and digitally transformed that company. Ellie Mae has been incredibly successful. I was there for 3 years. Company went public. They actually were just recently acquired, so they're now coming off the market. But a tremendous success story. And during that tenure there, I realized that I was a bit of a unicorn myself, having a degree in computer science and a degree in marketing. I took to marketing technology and sales technology just right away and loved it, and found through me hosting and leading a regular user group that most marketeers, this was a bit of a foreign language and foreign concepts to them. So I started the company in 2007 with the mission to make marketing heroes, and to do that through helping them with the methods and technologies for driving growth all around digital transformation.
Very cool. And what kind of work does Demand Gen do today?
So I say we're an agency. A lot of people, when they hear the word agency, they think of the creative side of marketing. And we are not the art of marketing. We're the science of marketing. So we do implementations of marketing technologies and sales technologies. We help companies, primarily our main focus is helping companies with digital transformation. And there's really two classes of clients for us. There's those that have already started on the journey, and that's the majority of it, is they have invested in marketing automation, CRM, probably other MarTech at this point, but they don't feel that they're getting as much value, or they still feel overwhelmed, or maybe they're resource constrained. So we will go in and really act as an extension of their team and bring a small army of marketing operations experts to help them get more value from the technology and what they're doing, but not addressing the creative side. And then the other class of client we have is a company that hasn't invested in these tools yet. And it's surprising to me, because you would think there would be a, you know, that everybody at some point has invested in marketing automation, CRM. And surprisingly, there's still a lot, especially in older manufacturing companies and companies that have, you know, raised themselves on armies of salespeople and haven't really gone to the digital.
Yeah, we find the latter a lot in the types and a lot of the partners that we have. We have a lot of partners who are in their digital life. They maybe their website is you know, more like a brochure, or you know, maybe one or two pages. They're nascent in their email marketing, digital marketing, and their lead gen, their demand gen. So for them, where do they get started? I mean, a lot of times it probably seems overwhelming, but you know, how do you, you know, what is the first step in getting down that road?
It's, you remember in the 90s when people would say, do I need a website, right? People ask that question. Yeah. And there was a point where it was consultative. It was coaching. It was like, well, what's your business? What do you do? Where, how do you attract customers? And today, if somebody asked that question, it would be without question, right? It's almost one of the first places people go when they start a company is to GoDaddy and say, you know, is my domain available for my company name, right? They're starting a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel we're at that stage in the 90s where a question like this is, it depends. It depends on the size of the company. It depends on how they generate demand. But what I'll describe is the why, and then hopefully someone listening figure out, yeah, that's us. So in fact, when I started Demand Gen and I was just a company of one, the very first thing that I did that weekend, right before we launched, was finish up our website. And this was a website at that stage, way before WordPress, or at least I knew WordPress, you know, Dreamweaver. And I went to templatemonster.com and I bought a $65 website template. And then, you know, using my best of Photoshop skills and other, I launched our website. And it was like a 5-page brochure, exactly like you say. And the only thing that we had on that website at that time was a contact us form. And now where are we? Fast forward 12 years later. If you go to demandgen.com, it's not a template monster, you know, website. It's built on WordPress. I mean, we're not using Adobe Experience Manager. Would love to, but that's $250,000 website platform. So you really don't need, there's no cost to something like WordPress. And our website is chock full of content. There's a resources hub that has hundreds, maybe even 1,000 different pieces of content. And it is a way, just to give you an idea, David, we, every year, our client base, our new logo client base, new clients, almost 90, 95% of it comes through alliances and marketing and not through sales, not through hunting. So we are very, very dependent on demand generation that comes from us online or through our alliances. So our website is chock full of content. And we use marketing automation on a regular basis for our email campaigns. And those might be to drive people to those pieces of content. Might be because we're having an event like talked about this week. We were, you know, at Serious Decisions. So we had several different lunch and learns and we had a networking reception. So we're using marketing automation for, I would say that's tactical marketing, right? We want to get butts in seats and we are inviting people and driving them to a landing page to register for those events. And then after the event, we're going to nurture and follow up. So because our go-to-market strategy is thought leadership as lead bait, if you will, you know, put this content out there and get people to bite on it and then use marketing automation to score them, which, you know, using technology to help prioritize those leads for sales and to nurture them so that, you know, there's no silver bullet in marketing. We want them to get a stream of content from us. So if people listening, like if their business can be generated online, if they can be a thought leader in their area of expertise and produce videos and blog posts and ebooks and make those findable on the web and do some outbound, absolutely they should have a marketing automation system and certainly a CRM. Should they start with something like HubSpot? If they're a small business, under 2,000 employees or even just a handful of employees, HubSpot's a great option. If they're a larger organization, maybe something like a Marketo. And if they're a very large enterprise, they probably want to look at systems like Marketo and Eloqua. And if they're in B2C, they have different options. B2C, by the way, David, is not a focus for us. So
yeah,
mostly B2B. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, that is extremely helpful. I think that that idea, that concept of trying to develop the content and get people coming to you as opposed to you having to go to them, I think that's would be very rewarding for some of our existing partners or new partners coming on. We try to do some of that right now through some of our other programs, our marketing programs, to help them along. But we've heard for years that there's not enough resources sometimes to take on this. It's overwhelming to these partners of what do I need to build. We can help them actually with some of the content, but the idea of driving a potential customer their way and then nurture them along is certainly that's the most beneficial. They can get the most value for that.
And you got to be smart about domains that you have, right? So their company name may be something, but maybe there are domains that they should get that serve as landing pages to for things that people are searching for.
Right.
So for example, when I launched the company, I registered MarketoTraining.com and MarketoConsulting.com, and I did that for Eloqua.
Wow.
So I registered the domains for almost, if you will, the products that our clients use, knowing that they would search Google for Marketo Training or Marketo Consulting, and I wanted to be right there at the top. So I used what I call microsites as a way to attract people into our website. But as you were saying, I think that was John, this is not for the faint of heart, right? You have to commit resources
Absolutely.
To it, whether that's dollars or people or a combination of both. So you can work with an outside boutique agency that provides both the creative as well as support for the technology, or if you have an internal person, which I recommend. I mean, if online is really going to be a channel for you, then hire someone who's good at digital and understands digital demand generation for your business.
I think that's important because some of the things that we offer is that help. We actually have a marketing department that's really considered it's like a small ad agency. They're really going to help them with that content. But they need someone on at their location that is committed to making this go. You can't go halfway. If you're going to get on the interstate, let's go the speed limit. Let's or exceed it a little bit. Let's don't get in the right hand lane and go 40 because it's never going to work.
Yeah. And I have a book. And by the way, not to just plug the book, but it's
Plug away.
Here it comes. It's it's free. I'm on the New York Times best giver list. And it's not free because it's like a wafer. It's a great 130-page, quick read called Manufacturing Demand. And if anybody wants to download a free copy of it, they can just get that off of our website. You can just search Google for Manufacturing Demand, or go to demandgen.com and you'll find it in the resources area. And it's all about lead management. It really breaks down, why you need a CRM, why you need marketing automation, and then what you would do with these systems. So it goes through things like the demand funnel so that you don't call everything a lead that you generate, that there's inquiries and MQLs and sales accepted leads. It goes through lead scoring, goes through nurturing, goes through persona development. So for anybody who wants a digital copy, go grab that.
That's a great offer.
The hardbound, go to Amazon.com, Manufacturing Demand. I think anybody who's curious about what I'm sharing about, digital transformation, that's a great starting book and will answer a lot of the questions and set them on the way there.
So
I think we should read that, John.
I think we should read that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get on. Les, if you downloaded that.
Yeah, Les, can you get a couple copies? Get them autographed, please.
As my host of today's podcast inviting me on, I'll get your guys' addresses. I'll send you some signed copies.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Well,
in harmony.
Wow. John and I do a lot together, so we're oftentimes synced up. So, Dave, when you talk about lead scoring, I kind of want to dive into that as a sort of a side topic. How in depth should a partner go? A lot of times you know, you don't want to rule out anybody that could be looking, but you also don't want to waste the time on someone who might just be downloading a white paper or a case study and that may not be interested in buying a system or something like that. So, you know, how in depth from a scoring perspective do you want to go? I mean, how many people do you want to filter out before you get to the real one? Or how do you determine, you know, that threshold on how, when they should move from, you know, just like someone inquiring into like an actual marketing qualified lead or a sales accepted lead? So, how, you know, what's sort of the idea there?
Sure. Chapter 5 of the book. let's do a little reading. So where did lead scoring come about? I probably need therapy. I haven't undergone it, but I have heard my leads suck throughout my career enough times by sales that I said, I ran this campaign, true story, and with Joe Langner was the head of sales at Ellie Mae at the time. And he walks into my office and he says, Dave, how's the campaign going? I'm like, you tell me. Like, we just saw the early results. We created this demo of our product, like, you know, trialware. And so we pushed it out. This is at Ellie Mae. And we pushed out the free trial and we had 1,000 downloads in the first day. And now for a company that had never generated a lead online, never. Wow. This was a big moment for me. I was so excited. I'd been there like 3 months. We propped up a marketing automation system. And we were doing our outbound email campaigns. We didn't have scoring in place at that point. And I said, it's like 1,000 people. I go, will you let me know? Go talk to sales. So he comes back about an hour later and he has his face. And you know the face. It's like, I kind of have some bad news for you. And he could tell how excited I was. And so I said, what's up, Joe? And he goes, Dave, all the leads are shit. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, I did. I went and talked to the salespeople and, you know, he said, all the leads are shit. And I kind of thought like Glengarry, Glenn Ross moment. Like I was the guy, you know,
stick knives.
Put the coffee down. But I was marketing and I'm like, these leads, I go, Joe, nobody who downloads a free trial of our software is a shit lead.
Right.
Nobody's willing to commit that level of time to download a piece of mortgage software. I mean, I'm not netting in the wrong people. And right. He goes, no, actually, Dave, what we're seeing is that these are processors that are downloading. And the processors are, you know, because we filled, we had on the form, what is your role? And it was broker, which is the owner of a mortgage lender, or a loan officer, which is kind of the salesperson in a mortgage lender, sometimes one and the same. And then there's the processor, the behind the scenes paperwork person. So what was interesting is with our messaging around what the software was and the free trial, they couldn't help but want to take a look. But the point that sales was making is that was not their buyer. And so they were getting to them and they were like, yeah, I'm Jennifer. Like I downloaded the trial. It looks cool. I saw the demo and I wanted to check it out. And he's like, so are you the ones that are responsible for making the decision on switching from the software you're using? She goes, oh, no, that's my manager. But it's really cool. I really like it. So that's why the leads were all shit. So I said to Joe, I go, look, Joe, I've spent my career hearing my leads suck at different times. And I have to say at this company, there's never been a better time for me in marketing for a company like this because it's such a targeted market. So we sat down and we did a workshop together. And I said, tell me who your tall, dark, and handsome is. I want to know from sales perspective who you want to talk to. And he goes, it would be a broker owner. And I'll do this quickly. It would be a mortgage broker. That would be the best person for us to talk to. I go, who then next? He goes, probably actually a processor because they're very influential. So, all right, so they're part of the buying committee. And then who last? The loan officer. They don't really love using software, but you know, they want to know their pipeline. And so in that order, I go, okay, now tell me about firmographic information. And we went through, continued through workshop. And he goes, well, one of the value props of our systems is for companies that have a lot of loan officers and even better when they have multiple locations. I'm like, now we're getting someplace. So you can see where I'm going, which is as I learned the tall, dark, and handsome, that's what became the explicit criteria. It's not easy, by the way. There's techniques I've developed right. over the years that our consultants use to get that information from sales because, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, I want someone who has budget, authority, need, and time frame.
Yeah. No, I want the band.
Band. We know Bant. We know where he lives, but he's often hard to get on the first date, especially if the first date is a form where we're asking them some information to fill out. So that's one of the dimensions of scoring is knowing what a few of those criteria are from a fit perspective. Because you brought up the point, David, about what about false positives? What if it's someone who's just downloading a piece of information? So the second dimension is interest level. And the interest level is their digital body language. How many times have they been to the site? What mm-hmm. frequency? What pages are they looking at? So what lead scoring is, in a nutshell, is taking a look at their digital body language on one axis and mathematically scoring that through an algorithm in a marketing automation system, taking the data that we have on them, that tall, dark, and handsome criteria, producing a numerical score there, and then picture like a 9-box grid where in the upper right corner is super high score for interest and super high score for fit, and that is a marketing qualified lead. That's the A. Joe, if I get you one of these, will you not tell me it's shit? Yes, Dave. If they're doing all of this and they're matching that persona, then yeah, we'll follow up on that and we won't call it shit. Now in this lower left corner, let's agree that's all shit. So I don't want you touching it. I'll send it to you. You'll get these E-level leads if you want to see them. But from an SLA, a service level agreement, let's agree that they are shit until I either get more data on them through a progressive profile or enrichment and then get more engagement from them. And that's how you change the conversation with sales, and you operationalize that in both marketing automation and CRM. Last question would be is, well, who needs that? Only people that are generating, I would say, a high volume of leads. If you're generating a fair number of leads online and you're going to weigh down your sales team in the shit leads, then you've got to put scoring in place. If you're only generating a handful of forms online, you're going to follow up on everything. And yeah, some of it's going to be shit.
I think that last part, what you said there is key too, because if you're not generating, you know, enough leads as it is today to overwhelm your sales team, then follow up with everyone. Because what's the difference at this point? So if you're only getting, you know, a couple of leads a week or 10 leads a month or something like that, then you should be following up with all of them, because it's pointless not to. So if they're on your site, you should know that. And there are lots of pieces of technology that you can put in place to understand every single person that comes to your website.
And how long they're on what page and what do they look at.
So I think
it's really insightful. And I'll tell you something very interesting about, especially as it relates to your audience. Here's a little factoid. Do you know that the leads generated by our partners have the lowest conversion rate? Mind blowing, right? Like, wait a second. A partner is referring someone to us, and that has a lower win rate than leads that we generate on our own. How's that possible? Wouldn't the partner, know that? Well, you know, unless your partner sales reps are really tuned into your ideal customer profile and have vetted it out, because right, sometimes they may be having a conversation. It's like, yeah, I use Marketo, and it's like, oh, how are you guys doing with? Oh, we're struggling. We're just super busy, and you know, we don't use it that much. You guys at Demand Gen probably could help you with that. And so they call us up, refer a lead to us, or do something online, and we reach out. And again, that person's like, yeah, I'm not the decision maker. I mean, I was just having a conversation with Jim, and you know what I'm saying? Like, some of those are false positives for us.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, that happens in our space as well. I mean, we get a lot of customers or potential customers that come to us. Oh yeah, I got a phone system, and they're like, oh yeah, you start, and they're like, yeah, I'm in the middle of a 3-year contract with AT&T, and I can't go anywhere. And it's like, okay, this conversation is moot. So yeah, we totally get that with that sort of that take. It happens all the time with us. Tell us a little bit about. So you work with Marketo today. What are some of the things you're doing with Marketo or with HubSpot or with Eloqua to help customers?
Sure. Great question. So even just this past week, we were at Austin at the Serious Decisions Conference. And so we did a few things together. First, we did a networking reception on the very first night. And the reason that we do that with a partner like Marketo is a little secret. That's how we know who's going to the conference, right? So we'll run campaigns and invite them to a networking reception on the first night. And unless the trade show vendor is giving us the list of who's coming, and they often don't, it's a way for us to do a pretty low cost, collaborative event, cost maybe a couple $1,000 for each one of us, rent a space, provide, booze, food. We did music because it was Austin.
Yep.
And then you have, 100, 200, maybe as many as 500 people, depending on the size of the event, that are going to be at the conference. And then we'll look through those as they register. We often do something like a lunch and learn. So we'll invite them to lunch during the conference and rent out a restaurant. And that's maybe $1,000, $2,000, depending on how many people with them. And we'll do a birds of a feather networking event. So when we're at physical events, we'll work with our partners to do, you know, get all the fish in the barrel, you know. So let's get everybody that we want to target together and work with our partners there. Other things we'll do with Marketo to make their clients successful is we'll do online stuff. And I'm a huge fan of online. So we will do webinars together, or we'll do podcasts like this. I have a podcast myself, and I've had probably 7 people from Marketo on the podcast, different experts in different areas of the business to produce content together. We'll do little episodes of Demand Gen TV, which are just short videos, show and tells on their product. And again, we're producing all of this content to A, let their market know that Demand Gen is a partner that will help them with the technology. But it's a give to get, right? It's inform and educate their customers and then connect those customers to us through giving. And I am proud to say that last year we were the 2018 Marketo Partner of the Year. So they were acquired by Adobe, and it's very cool for little old Demand Gen. We're about 70 people to, you know, get that kind of recognition for driving revenue to them. And when it's a great partnership, David, you're driving new customers to them, and they're driving their install base of customers or net new customers to us to jointly make them successful. And by the way, a fact on the, you know, alliances, even though I said we convert, the lowest rate of conversion of leads is what we generate through our partners. It is about 30 to 35% of our new logos.
That's your low point, 35%.
Yeah.
Well,
not too bad. Not too shabby.
Yeah.
We're actually a Marketo customer. We have been for the last, gosh, 4 years, five years.
Yeah.
So we should discuss after this call, I think, maybe.
We should talk. And and you can relate, right, to like, do you have a dedicated Marketo administrator? You know, who's doing it? Is it a nighttime, part-time job? And right, it's Spider-Man rather. With great power comes great responsibility. You're only going to get out of it as much as you administer and put into the system and do digital marketing.
Yeah, it's we had Marketo. We put it in here. Gosh, kind of came from years ago. There was a product that they had just bought called Insiterra, and it was a product that was basically telling you who was on your site, giving you all the sort of demographic information that they had available, and then they had purchased it. Now it's part of Marketo's, and that's kind of how we got in, because our at the time CMO knew the CMO at Insiterra and sort of like came through that. So it's been a fun relationship, but it is a, you know, if you don't know what you're doing in Marketo, it can get incredibly confusing super fast. I mean, it's wickedly powerful, but it has there's so much flexibility in it that it's sometimes difficult to understand where to even begin.
Yeah. And that's why I made the point, like, would you today not have a website? And you guys are a small business. Meaning you're not 3M, right? And yet you've invested in these technologies, and you'll only get out of it what you put into it. But I think we are at the point where everyone should have a marketing automation system and move away from batch and blast email marketing.
Absolutely.
It's time. No, I'd love to chat with you guys offline and get you on a path. But by the way, though, my sales team would probably say that you don't match our fit criteria, because you guys are probably smaller than our.
Oh, I don't know. Wow. Don't hate us. We're the seventh largest UCaaS company in the industry.
That's kind of hurtful, David.
There you go. Well, you know, anti-selling. What can I say?
You mentioned you've got a podcast. Did you actually mention the name of your podcast?
I don't know if I did. It's Demand Gen Radio. Imagine that. My company is Demand Gen, and the podcast is Demand Gen Radio. People ask me, how
clever.
Did you get that?
Clever
to get that URL and trademark story, maybe for another time. Demand Gen Radio. If you go to your favorite podcast app, or even go to demandgenradio.com and search for Demand Gen Radio, my program is mainly targeted to marketing leaders as well as sales leaders. It's all about the methods and technologies for driving growth. And the people that I have on the podcast are CMOs sharing their stories of digital transformation. I do have episodes, mini-series called MarTech Monday, where I talk about technology, a specific product or enhancement to a product. Those I mix in those episodes. And then even just this past month, I wanted to celebrate National Women's Day. We have 60% of our employee base are women, 60% of our leaders are women. I want to celebrate National Women's Day. So I did a mini-series called Women in Revenue, and I've had they're all CMOs, but I've had three CMOs on the program to just talk about what it's like to be a woman, women in business today and their journeys. And so I mix it up a little bit, but it's mainly about marketing methods and technologies.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Great. We should get Michelle, who's our president, on. She's fantastic. She's a CMO. She came from CA Technologies. She's our president of the company now, but she started as our CMO here, and she's got a fantastic tech background. So it'd be great to have her on. But anyways, Dave, we've taken up too much of your time today. We always end the podcast. We ask a couple of fun questions. Sean, why don't you go ahead?
So, David, what is your favorite sandwich?
Oh, I love warm food. So my favorite sandwich is a patty melt.
Oh, okay.
Grilled rye with a juicy burger. And I'm a cheddar guy when it comes to a patty melt. I don't know if there's different ways.
See, this is the details we don't normally have to pull out of somebody. So it's a cheddar. Is it a mild cheddar?
It's got to be sharp.
Or is it a sharp cheddar?
It's sharp. Yeah, I want a nice contrast to the onions and the juice.
How do you like your burger cooked?
If it's on a patty melt, it's probably medium rare. I don't want it to feel spongy, like bouncy in my mouth. I want a little juicy, but not undercooked.
Okay.
That sounds delicious. I've been with you, John, numerous times where you've ordered a patty melt.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's
I need to understand the difference between a patty melt and a hamburger. I mean, they're essentially the same thing,
like,
right?
They grill them with onions, and it's on the grill. It's not.
Yeah. Interesting. Our second question, Dave, is do you have any pets?
Oh, another interesting answer. I don't have any pets. I'm not anti-pet because I love dogs. In fact, I'm kind of the dog whisperer. But because I travel so much and my kids are grown up, I have no pets. However, my daughter and her fiance have moved in with us. They're getting married in September. And until they finish finding their house, they've brought two corgis along. So I kind of have pets and I love it. And just like I'm a grandpa and I'm going to get to hand them back to them once they move out.
What are the corgis' names? I love corgis.
Jax and Sherlock. And Jax is my daughter's corgi and Sherlock is Alex's corgi. And they're just adorable.
Wow.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. I feel you though on the traveling and pets.
Merry little beast too.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. Love them though.
Well, David, it has been absolutely fantastic having you on the show today. We really appreciate your time.
Great show.
Lots of great input. We'd love to follow up with you and learn a little bit more about demand gen, and maybe we can work together in the future.
Absolutely. If we ever want to do another episode and talk about, we have a Demand Gen Alliance, which is our partnerships and what we do there. I'd be happy to share our secrets of success in terms of how we work with the MarTech marketing technology companies out there. We talked a little bit about Marketo, but we have about 15 different MarTech companies that we go to market with. And it's really helped build the business. It lowers our cost of sales and it's very win-win. So happy to chat about that another time.
Yeah, we'd love to have you on. We'll get Frederick to set that up. So thanks so much for your time today. And we will talk to you again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
All right, guys. All the best.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That was a great conversation with David. I love his voice.
Yeah, he's got a great radio voice. I mean, that's his calling.
Fantastic. But I have to really understand, what is the difference between a patty melt and a hamburger? It's bread with meat and cheese and onion. It's the same thing.
Well, typically a hamburger is cooked on a grill or is cooked on a flat in a diner, if you will. And it's the only burger is cooked. Where patty melt is, they actually have the grilled onions. They've cooked separately on the side. They put it on and they've grilled it on rye bread. It's like a grilled cheese sandwich, if you will, David. I can't believe you don't know the difference between a hamburger and that.
Well, I just don't. I think that the market. I think it's interesting.
I'm kind of scared that you. I'm frightened that you don't know that.
Well, I understand what a patty melt is, but when I see that on a menu, why don't they just call it a hamburger?
Because it's not. It's a patty melt. It's a melt.
It's a hamburger on rye bread.
It's a hamburger. No, because.
It's a Jewish. It's a Jewish hamburger.
You don't grill the bun on a hamburger, do you?
I mean, you could. What's to stop you?
Well, you could. Okay, I see.
When I make hamburgers at home, I put the bun on the grill.
We put the bun on the grill, but you're not putting.
I put cheddar on it.
But you're not putting it on a grill and actually cooking the bread.
I'm not putting it on a flat top.
A flat top.
And smashing and putting like a piece of like aluminum over it to cover it up and like steam in its own juices. Is that what you're insinuating?
Yes, that's what I'm in.
It's a hamburger. Let's just clear that up. The patty melt needs to come into the hamburger family and just call it what it is. I'm tired of the patty melt standing on its own, being some sort of unique thing when in all reality, it's a hamburger.
Oh, my goodness, David.
You got me set off now.
Wow. You can tell us a Thursday afternoon here. Goodness.
No, anyways.
A little wound up, aren't we?
I just, you know, it got me on my patty melt soapbox.
What about the tuna melt? So is there a difference between a tuna melt?
It's not a tuna hamburger.
That's a
tuna burger.
Oh, here we go. I was going to leave him alone. You know, David, can we get a couple of Snickers over here? I think David's a little bit hungry. He's a little snarky over here.
Anyway. Really fascinating conversation with David Lewis.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
He's got a really good company, but his sort of mathematical approach to marketing is a lot of times what was overlooked. And, you know, a lot of times people are like, marketing is more of an art than a science. And, you know, you can really get down into the weeds in it if you're really pushing it. And for companies that are driving hundreds or thousands of leads a month, you have to, because you just cannot call it an email and you can't give a personal touch to every single one of them if you're generating that many leads. So you have to be able to have a scientific process for, you know, dealing with these types of people in this situation. You know, these were the ones we want to call back because they're our highest priority, our highest score. These ones we want to push over here into this nurture campaign.
Yeah.
You've got to have it. Otherwise, you're going to be
overwhelmed.
You'll be sort of underwater and not know where to start.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you're a partner out there who is generating a ton of leads, look into David's company. I mean, they do a fantastic job.
Or the other side of it is, if you have a partner out there that is not generating a ton of leads and you want to be able to generate some more, you can actually go download his book and get some ideas on what you could do and
where to start.
Yeah, where to start. But at least start somewhere, and then have the problem. There's too many leads coming in. That's a great problem to have.
Yeah. You'll always take that problem.
Absolutely.
I mean, even if, as he said, they're shit leads. By the way, this is going to have to be definitely an explicit tag podcast this week.
Yeah. Is there okay.
We'll have to make sure we get that on there.
I haven't said the word shit. I just did. Goodness gracious. I wasn't going to. I went through all the. Okay. I guess we're.
Right.
Yeah.
No
miners.
No miners. Coal miners? We can have coal miners listen. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have 7 people in Nepal.
Maybe they're coal miners.
Maybe. I don't know. Listen to our show.
Anyways, I think that's it for today.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, David. Good
we'll talk to you again soon for Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz.
I'm John Roth.
We'll see you next time.